Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hi, happy Tuesday. Today is April 10th, 2018, and I'm Michelle Pichet filling in for Jeannie. I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice and Dr. Timothy Hayes, and we all welcome you warmly to the show. And thanks for choosing to be with us. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and it puts you in the queue with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to strengthen your practice of forgiveness. So now let's welcome Michael in support of our discussion today and learning forgiveness and practicing forgiveness.
Thank you, young lady. Appreciate you being available. For Jeannie to be off with her daughter in love, today they're getting an ultrasound done to find out whether they're going to have a boy or a girl. So she's going to be the grandmother for the first time with her own. She has some strep grandchildren, but her son is and daughter-in-law are having a baby coming up. So today's an exciting day. They're off doing ultrasounds. Not something I necessarily suggest, but everybody's going to do what everybody's going to do. But there's a big party tonight. So hold the space for Gabby and Ryan at this new one coming into the world. And it's pretty awesome to watch how conscious they're being about, you know, they did detox before conception and it was very conscious and very purposely done and welcoming this child into the world. So hold the space for them and for the big reveal party tonight. Our Course in Miracles lesson today is lesson 91. And when you realize that perception comes from one of two places. You know, we know that perception is a construct, and it is a construct whose source is either from carbon-based memory or from the state of being, the mind of being, or what in the ancient teachings was called the mind of Christ. So it's kind of like the perceptual screen. It's just that. It's a screen. And either the past stored in carbon-based memory writes on that screen, and if I were to, you know, define a word as a tool of communication, indicative of an interaction between two, most people would agree with that definition. And so based on that definition, I invite you to notice that right now there are words running in your mind that you're not communicating with anyone else. If there are words running in your mind that you're not communicating with anyone else, then and words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, the question becomes, who's in there with you? Who's telling you the meaning of everything? And so this database, this multi-generational database that we call a body-mind unit, has stored in it everything from the past. And it is, for most people, it is the root of all perception. And so when you realize that whatever's stored in carbon-based memory is from the past, if that's the root of your perception, then notice that you perceive everything through your past compared to an actual live present moment experience. where instead of the mind structuring images, perceptions out of the past, we actually are alive in the moment and receiving information directly from the world of actuality through that mind of being, or again, and it's not a religious idea, the mind that was called the mind of Christ, then one of two things is going to write on that screen. It's pretty obvious that if it's the past, then all that the past could do is replicate what's in us. Now, there's a book about that if you haven't read it yet. You can go to our website. It's free. You can download it for free. It's called Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And so you can go to www.whyagain.org and you can download the book free. And or you can also go to the, if you want it free, you're welcome to it. If you want to support us, which is this radio show going, you'll notice we have no advertisers, you can go to the catalog and you can order the book as a DVD, or pardon me, a CD set, and you can listen to it that way. Either way, doesn't matter. But the book is about how the replicant mind, and basically all that the past can do is, yes, it can reorganize information from its past, but all it can do is present its past in different ways. And if it's presenting its past in different ways and blocking the awareness of what is actually true coming from the state of being, and this one can really, you know, bring up for a lot of people, this is a real bummer. Because there comes a point where if you realize you've been living out of carbon-based memory, that everything has been a replication of the past, and you've never actually experienced a live, present moment experience. But we can collapse the inclination of the past to keep filling that screen and let the thing be still and quiet. Let it be in a receptive state where the mind of being can actually write its perception, can actually construct a picture of what it experiences as going on. Now, remembering that state of being is a state of love, and if you hold a newborn child, you get a direct experience of what the state of being is, you get a direct experience of what love is. And when we are restored to that, then we start to actually live as human beings. Otherwise, it's basically automaton. You know, there's a lot of movies out there about what's the word I'm looking for? Not ghouls, but basically automatons, creatures who have no human life in them. If all your mind is doing is presenting things, and, you know, if it presents good things from the past, then you say, well, this is a good experience, but it's not the present moment's experience. So when you look at this particular lesson, miracles are seen in light, what this lesson is saying is that when you stand in a space of being, then you bring light to the mind. When you bring light to the mind, you see the possibilities of the present. And compared to what carbon-based memory is doing with its replicant perception, which is darkness, it becomes miraculous. You get to start to experience miracles that are just the most amazing thing, the most amazing insight, and the biggest miracle being that of being in the state of active present love 24/7, 365. And as you bring forward that state of being 24/7, 365, as several of the lessons we've covered in the last few weeks bring forward, you become the light of the world. You bring forward that space of light and of love. And as you bring forward that space of light and as of love, pardon me, and love, then you bring forward a contribution that is incomprehensible to the mind that is just replicating its past and thinks that that replicate past is actually life. So our goal here is to understand the process of forgiveness to be able to collapse carbon-based memory, not destroy it, because you know it has information, that information. Skills can be stored there. Lots of wonderful things can be there. We're not saying there's anything wrong with it, but if it is the seat of your perception, then relative to living in the presence of active love and having your perception constructed from that state of being, it's darkness. And when you bring your light to the world, when you bring active, conscious, present love to the world, then the game changes, and we're here to support that game change happening. I have a personal request I'd like to make before we move forward with the rest of the conversation, and that is I'm just going to invite the whole community to be in a space of love for a particular event that occurred just in the last few days. And it's one I've had to do some work around for what it brought up for me. And so I'm asking for support and just holding the space for me as well. It definitely showed me a piece of grief in my mind that I hadn't been in touch with for some time, that I didn't realize was even there. But up near, up in Saskatchewan, a few days ago, there was a group of hockey players on a bus that were T-boned by a truck. 29 people on the bus, and 15 of them died in the accident. Young hockey players from all over Canada, from a small town up there, tough on a small town. And just to hold the space. One, I'd love the support of just processing through. I couldn't speak about this yesterday when I read it. I went downstairs and, geez, what's going on? It was obvious there was something moving for me. And it was difficult for me to speak of it. Today I can think about it and speak of it without tears. So I processed through some of that. But there's still some of it left to give her support for the families of these young men and a couple of coaches who died in that accident. And then the kids that are left, the 14 kids that are left who lived through it, and just support for what they're going to go through. Not sure totally at this point even what the actual core of the trigger was for me, because of course we read about tragedies all the time, and I haven't read about one that's touched me that directly in some time. But of course, being a Canadian and having been a hockey player, I can certainly identify, and that seems to be the root of the deeper level of impact of that event for me. As a kid, for years, I played that game, and a lot of friends were hockey players. And so just identification with all of that seems to be the root of my unresolved pain around that. Inviting support, not just for myself, but for everybody in Canada being touched by that directly, personally, and of course,
so is Michael there? Does he need us to breathe with him? Or was he just about to say, touched by it personally and energetically or emotionally?
Basically, he got bumped off the show. And so,
okay.
I don't know
so
if
we just
meant.
Well, we just want to hold the space for people who have been touched by this in any way. And for all of us, as we get touched by different stimuli outside that reveal to us grief or anger work that we have, that we could still do to leave us in more direct conscious awareness of our true nature. And so, Michelle, it's probably a good thing to text Michael and let him know, because the last two times he's dropped off the call, he was unaware he was not on the call, and he just kept talking rather than dialing back in. So
I agree.
So we have our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call in and press 1, Michelle will see your hand up, and we can look into entertaining a comment or a question while we're waiting for Michael to get back on and see if there was more of an intro that he wanted to do. I was probably about 5 minutes past the hour before I got on the call, and so I don't know if he already did the lesson from the Course in Miracles, but
actually, he did. He reviewed a lesson and then actually went into talking about how he was touched yesterday before we would take any callers. And right now, nobody has a hand up, so we definitely invite you to put a hand up, because I think after I'm holding a space of a moment for all the challenges these folks were going to be headed towards, he was going to take callers. I know when I saw the article, a peripheral one, I thought of the idea of forgiveness work immediately, because it was a secondary story that the coroner or the medical professional had pronounced dead and released the name of a player who had died and mistake the identity with someone who had passed, and they told the family the person was okay. So, I can't even begin to wrap my mind around that idea that, you know, they told me my son's dead, and then however many hours later it was reversed, and vice versa, thinking, wow, my kid survived this tragedy. Oh, no, he didn't. I don't know if you had seen that offshoot of a story, but it's like, wow. There
I did
would be
not.
A
I missed that.
Can you imagine that, Michael? Like, as far as everything you were saying related to the challenges these folks were going to take, and someone was mispronounced. Are you there, Michael?
I am, yes. You disappeared
okay.
For a moment for me. But, yeah, that's just unfathomable. I hadn't been aware of that aspect of the story, but it was certainly something that deeply touched me.
Hmm.
Are you there, Michelle?
Yeah, no, I'm glad I have tools. I've been talking to some folks recently who are really, really struggling. And for whatever reason, they can't hear the message. And while you were bumped off there for a minute, Tim filled in with this concept that doing our work and then being the light and extending that to those around us. And, you know, it's, you know, another piece of work for me to do it when it resonates sadness that people aren't willing to hear, or that they're so, acculturated, domesticated, brainwashed into the belief systems about it's everything out there.
To me, that's the reason for continuing to put up the message, because, you know, taking our opening lesson from the course here and the comments about it, and you look at the perception coming from carbon-based memory, if you don't have the information of carbon-based memory, and all the people know how to do is generate their perceptions from carbon-based memory, if there are no brain cells for the message, then the message can't enter into that generative process. Now, there's from Yeshua 2,000 years ago where he says, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. In essence, what he's saying is you've got to have the brain cells. When we open to being, when the screen of perception is available for being to write meanings, then we don't need to have the brain cells. The brain cells will come with the perception that's being built. But those who only know how to function out of perception written from carbon-based memory, in his terms, in Yeshua's terms 2,000 years ago, he said they don't have the eyes to see or the ears to hear. Those who, having eyes, do not see. I mean, they're looking right at it, quote-unquote, supposedly. Of course, we know that perception doesn't come. Perception of things that we see don't come from our eyes, but rather from the brain. But it can be right there as plain as the proverbial nose on one's face. But if one doesn't have the brain cells to be injected into the perception to perceive accurately, then it literally can't be seen. The mind can't create that construct. So the words leave someone else's lips that represent a particular actuality. Those words, or at least what appear to be words, are really just frequencies of a vibrating voice box that move air molecules. There are no words that come out of anyone's mouth. We talk about the words coming out of someone's mouth, but that's not true. I've never said a word in my life. But I do know how to vibrate this little voice box, this little flap of skin that produces a vibration, that when that vibration hits the ear, whether it's from me speaking into a microphone that's converted to an electrical signal that's transmitted, you know, perhaps thousands of miles to someone else on the other end and converted back to a frequency that causes a little plastic cone in the phone to vibrate, and then those air molecules vibrating as a result of the movement of that plastic cone cause some bones to move in the ear, and the electrical frequency produced by those cause brain cells to fire. And if they don't fire brain cells for accurate content, then one can't perceive accurately. So to understand the process becomes key to the inspiration of, and whether people hear the message or not is irrelevant. Keep putting it out, because over time people build brain cells and go, oh, that's what that means. Okay, now I've got it. So
there's no hands up, so I'm going to ask a question about this. And I'm sure Tim has. I don't know if you've heard of reactive attachment disorder, Michael. It's when an infant doesn't have that initial bonding connection, skin to skin, and you know, the case that I'm thinking of from a while back, that I had a young lady. She was adopted from an orphanage in Russia, and when she was born, she was given up for adoption, and she was just put into an orphanage home, like four babies in a crib, and they had their physical needs met, but certainly not any emotional, social, developmental needs. And then, you know, the mom comes to Russia 18 months later to adopt this, you know, beautiful baby girl. But
right.
As she matured, there is not only the absence of the brain cells, but like, it's like almost like a habilitation. The original kind of connection to source or love get baked in developmentally.
Right,
and,
right. Sensitive period for learning that wasn't fulfilled.
So, you know, when I've seen you do lectures, even people who are maybe, you know, just humoring their friend, fine, I'll go to your lecture, you know, can connect with this idea of beingness because of the experience of a newborn child. And then, well, okay, if that's a little bit foreign, maybe you don't have that kind of experience. We go to puppies and kittens and sunsets and oceans. But I have this person recently who had a lot of birth trauma, and the mother was traumatized before and after. And so when I use those words and those languages, it doesn't even like connect to her, she, like, I use the word precious, and she's like, I would never use that word. And I thought it was so interesting because you, not only is there like not the brain cells necessarily, but she doesn't have an emotional context for some of the words that I might use to try to help someone, you know, be open to the concept. So then I'm like, do I, you know, I mean, you're saying keep sort of repeating it and maybe offering examples where, you know, it's worked for other people because this person really can't see it for herself.
And that's where, well, I'm sure you're familiar, there's a whole process called reparenting, where it's working to take people back to those sensitive periods and reestablish the experience so that the energetic pattern is there to rely on and to produce perception from. So it's all part of the healing process. Sure.
Tim, do you have any comments like on that from a like clinical standpoint?
Well,
it's
just the kind of thing that you can't know for certain, and I tend to be the kind of person who works from a practical perspective, and so I am willing to try an intervention that's based on the theory of reactive attachment disorder or in the kind of theory that develops out of Michael's work, and whichever gets the results is the one that I go with. And I can't know the absolute what's the right or the wrong. I do have experience with people who, the more they, and these are generally speaking people, children that were, they were traumatized as children and were adopted, and the more loving, nurturing, respectful interactions they have in adulthood, the more they attack and recoil from them or look for ways to deny what everybody else in the scene can see, that, oh, your parents really love you, or your parents are going the extra mile. Now, what's the mechanism inside the person that has them pushing away loving, respectful, nurturing behaviors? I can't say. However, I've seen it as a pattern, and it's one of the more intractable and one of the more difficult things to help people work through, because it seems as though they're expressing a very deep distrust. And in order to get past that distrust, they would have to let themselves experience someone being nurturing, someone cherishing them, someone holding them in a space of love and interacting with them lovingly, despite the fact that they're coming from an angry or bitter or vengeful space. And unless we can get people to soften and be willing to risk that it's all a lie, I can't demonstrate to them if they won't soften, if they won't let themselves engage. So is the actual mechanism, the theory, I don't know, but.
Well, you just described, you know, that client that I'm talking about. Actually, I have a couple in mind that really resemble that exact dynamic. The gentler I am, the more patient I become. I mean, they're like, their face is distorted and twisted and you know, just reactive and angry and just like, you don't understand how disgusting I really am. And I mean, like, talk about arguing for your limitations, Michael. It's like there is a, like, almost a correlation there. So,
well,
as you were talking, though, I was thinking maybe asking for the willingness. Like, you know, hey, client, you're going to, you know, part of this process would be making yourself vulnerable and taking a risk that maybe there's a possibility that this is accurate. And if you want to go back later on to your belief system, you can. But how about we just consider a different way for a moment and just being more direct about that process?
Well, yep. And also, Michelle, another piece of the puzzle very likely would be that the energy that they're playing out in that circumstance, they're under great stress. And remember, when the stress is up and the chips are down, we turn to the behavior that our power person did to us that we hated the most. And so the tools offered there, along with the possibility, you know, would you be willing to entertain that maybe this is possible? And, you know, that would be one part of the equation. And the other one would be, and would you be willing to do some forgiveness work to remove the power person dynamic that you acquire? You know, I don't know what happens in any orphanage, an orphanage here, an orphanage in Russia, but I've certainly seen some pretty heavy-duty stuff come out of those circumstances. You know, perhaps what the child is doing is simply replicating the power person behavior, the person who had control over their lives. They perceived it as perception, and that person was not functioning as love. And so I'd certainly be, you know, putting the forgiveness tool into it and inviting them to go to work with that. And, you know, maybe also presenting in a way of, you know, if this were true, would you like to be experiencing it? So here's a set of parameters that can help you to at least taste of the experience and, you know, then assess for yourself what it is that you want to do with it. That makes sense to the question you're asking?
It does, and, you know, the fact that she's even willing to come back to me, I'm switching, you know, clients because I'm, you know, thinking of sort of my most challenging cases in terms of approaching it. And
right.
I told him earlier that this gal, I told her about the app and downloading it, and her first question is like, okay, well, what kind of kickback do you got? And Tim said I should tell her I get 3.7% of zero.
Well, and probably, you know, if you were to check out, if you were able, be able to locate and have your conversation with a power person, you'd probably find a power person who was cynical. And so
right.
It's just another reality to be forgiven.
Well, from my perspective, I have this philosophy: after the 100th no is a yes. And so generally these clients actually strengthen my ability to, you know, roll with resistance. So I'm just like probably working with myself out there. Like,
there it is.
It's all for all of us an inside job.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, we get to connect with each other on occasion and bring forward something else, which brings to mind that last week you had texted me that you were going to be sharing something on the show, and then things got, they ran away with us, and we never did get back to a client. Oh, that was the day that I lost my phone connection, was gone for 15 minutes having a dissertation with myself. So is that still something that's relevant or in the back of your mind that you might share with us?
We have a hand up. So what if we took our caller, and then if we had some time to fill, I could share.
Cool. Fabulous. Let's take a hello to our caller.
So this is area code 808. You're on the air, on the microphone.
Hi, this is Roma. Good morning,
hello,
everybody.
Hello, lady. Welcome.
Hey.
Good to hear your voice. How do you be?
I'm excited because I made my plane reservations to include Heartland yesterday.
All right.
Yes, I woke up feeling
sweet.
A lot of joy this morning. So we're connected. It's good.
Well, we'll look forward to
seeing
you.
And Michelle, I want to
That's
acknowledge
awesome.
You. Your speaking on the radio program is so much more clear than it used to be. And I used to wonder whether you were shy about being perceived, and that was what was behind the muffled voice, but I don't hear any muffled voice anymore. So it's fantastic. I can hear and understand every word you're saying. So I just want to acknowledge you. I don't know, you've made some kind of progress, and I can hear it. So thanks, Michelle. I'm interested in this topic about this child development thing.
Roma?
Yes.
Maybe you could hold for a second. I think Michelle had a response or a question for you before we go on to that other back to that other topic. Michelle?
Yep. Thanks, Michael. Roma, I appreciate what you're saying, and I offered that maybe my voice wasn't clearer or less muffled, but that your listening was more acute and thorough.
That certainly could be.
And you're in Hawaii and I'm in Michigan, and that probably has to do with it too. It's a long way.
I do have a particular sensitivity to voices, though, since that was my life expertise. So, but I'm sure you're probably right. Maybe it's a combination of both.
In the internet, you know, cell phones have a funny way of distorting people's conversations. So
do you feel like you've never had the problem that I thought I was perceiving?
People give me feedback that I have a really great way of articulating and using words to translate concepts and ideas and share information. So I actually get different feedback about that. But it sounds
I'm referring to. I absolutely agree with that, that you definitely have something to say. But the voice would sound kind of shy and a little bit quiet, and I couldn't really always understand what you were saying, and sometimes you would hesitate, and it was kind of like that, Michelle. 6 months ago, that's what I heard.
You know what? I have there's plenty of shows and archives, and I would agree. Sometimes if I'm present to fear, I might not be as articulate or as clear.
Yeah.
It's funny, the people in the chat room are saying, Michelle, I never had a challenge of hearing you. So, I'm distorted anyway, so.
Well, we all have a gift to give, and I continue to believe in the fact that earlier in the conversation when you were discussing, can we go on now, Michael? Or maybe I should get off the phone.
No,
I just want to get a response because Michelle put that
in the place and hear it.
So, yeah, go for it.
I don't know that we're resolved, but anyway. I was just trying to acknowledge you, Michelle.
I understand, and I feel complete. And, it's part of what we do, just give feedback. It automatically comes. So you were interested in the child development and this idea of reactive attachment disorder, which is just one way to label it. I mean, people with borderline personality disorder, their break in bonds might happen a little older in their childhood, but it's still impacting their sense of self and their ability to connect healthy in relationships, all kinds of, things that we label in the DSM are rooted in our disconnect from being. And once that gets handled, all of a sudden diagnosis is like just lift off.
Well, I was fascinated a few minutes ago. Michael said something that seemed to imply that energies lacking in the in early child development, newborn babies and could impact an inability to connect emotionally. And that's what I experienced. I was given my brother's 14-month-old baby when both of the parents were challenged with cancer. And what I noticed with her was that she didn't have a normal, when she came to live with us, that she didn't have a normal capacity to be able to play like most children. And what it required for me was tremendous. I had to be with her ongoingly from moment to moment, and I felt that there was an energy. Her mother was so sick that she couldn't even pick her up for the 3 months before they gave her to me. So from 11 months, to 14 months. The little girl had had no interaction with her mother, really, essentially. So I just was fascinated, Michael, with what you were saying, because obviously carbon-based memory, we all have it. We all have past experiences. You seem to be saying something, Michael, about energies that could be missing from parenting for an infant, and I'd like to hear you talk more about that. Michael, are you there?
Well, my take is that, you know, if we use a comparison of a flower, a plant, if the plant is a healthy seed and it's planted in healthy soil, properly watered, with all the nutrients that it needs, the sunshine that it needs, the fresh air that it needs, then it's naturally going to grow and bloom into the flower that is structured in the seed. That will just be natural. If any of those components are missing, then the flower is going to show up in some way, shape, or form as what we might call, as a human corollary, what we might call disabled. And until that energy that's missing is provided, then the flower is not going to bloom as it's designed to. It's not going to come into its fullness.
Yeah.
My thesis is that we come into this world in a device called the body-mind unit as human beings, as this presence of love, and that what allows that presence of love to flower, to blossom, and to bloom is that each interaction that we have with another is designed to give us a nutrient called conscious active present love.
Mm-hmm.
So the presence of the love of a mother is a certain energy, a certain set of frequencies. The presence of the love of a father is another set of energy, a different set of frequencies,
right,
both based in love. The presence of the love of a sibling, experiencing, you know, when a newborn comes in, experiencing a sibling as the presence of love.
Mm-hmm.
And an aunt, an uncle, a neighbor, that each of these are energies that are, to, like our analogy, the analogy I'm using of the plant, are nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And if all the nutrients are provided, then we naturally bloom as the presence of love. If we go through being raised in a world where one or more of those nutrients are missing, then in some way, shape, or form, our ability to express fully is going to be limited, to experience ourselves fully and express that as who we are and provide that nutrient to another are going to be missing. And to me, the process of this work is dual. One, if there are energies that have been taken in that go against our experiencing ourselves as the presence of love, those are the energies that need to be forgiven. And if there are energies that are missing that we, quote-unquote, should have had, that our natural experience would have brought us that active presence of love called mother love, that active presence of love called father, sibling, neighbor, friend, you know, aunt, uncle, then by creating the space for us to bring those nutrients back in, we fulfill, we fertilize the earth, so to speak, to produce the natural flowering state of a true human life.
Right.
So that would be my take on the question.
Yeah, she was with us for 3 months, and then 2 weeks after she came to live with us, her mother died. And then 3 months later, my brother called and said, the doctor's given me a full bill of health. I want my baby back. And I said, Jim, she needs a mother. And he said, oh, that's cultural bullshit. You know, he didn't believe there was any difference between a mother's love and a father's love. My mother talked me into giving the baby back, which was really hard because my motherly instincts were very, very active. And then I saw her, and she went back and lived with her brother and her father. And then I saw her in her early 20s, around the time her father finally died. And she was unusually shy, but also unusually brilliant. So it was a fascinating thing to see how she turned out without mother love. But she blossomed beautifully when she was with the two of us, my husband and I. And thank God I have a photograph of that. So, you know, it's interesting. But I like your distinction that if the love that is the natural nutrient is not missing, then I don't know whether you went so far as to say it, but what is the phrase we use for the power person dynamics that get instilled by inappropriate behavior from the parent, which have to be removed consciously, as you know, in this work that we do. Well, anyway, thank you. That's what I want to discuss. Let's hear more about Michelle's, what it was that she wanted to discuss.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate your input. Blessings. And also a thanks from your niece, if she hasn't come back to thank you for the gift of giving her that taste of the present, conscious, active presence of a mother's love. Even though you weren't her biological mother, it sounds like she really opened that space of mothering and motherhood in you. So that's a pretty awesome gift to give a child. Breathing with you. Sounds like there's perhaps a large piece of work to be done around loss with this little girl.
Well, I was never thanked by anybody.
Hmm.
Oh, God. And we loved her. And we lost her. My husband and I mean, that was one of the factors, I think, that ended the marriage. It was so traumatic. And, you know, men don't, I hate to make a general statement, but I think maybe it's true. I don't think men can process grief as well and as easily. I mean, grief is not easy to process, but I think it's even harder for men to process because they're taught not to be vulnerable. So, yeah. Wow. Thank you for thanking me. It never even occurred to me that piece was missing. Oh, my God.
What a gift to give. What a gift to give. You know? And for this young girl, what she would have gone through, I mean, you expressed that 3 months before her mother, you know, was so disabled she couldn't even pick her up, but what kind of mental, emotional energies were being sprayed on this child from the very beginning as her mother developed cancer. I mean, no judgment and no idea what the dynamics were that went on, but obviously in order for her to pass away that quickly, there had to be some pretty heavy-duty stuff going on, and the child would become subject to all of that. So for you to have the generosity of spirit to step in and provide that kind of support and energy it's monumental.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank
it was
you for every child who's never received
for
that.
For
every child who's never received that.
Oh, my God.
And sadly, there are millions. Breathing with you.
Yeah, we really wanted to have children, but we just didn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it sounds like there might be some grief work to do around that one yet.
Oh, yeah, I've been doing it for years. Yeah. But, you know, the difference that this call is making is the gratitude. I mean, you know, I was taken for granted. My brother called me with his earlier child and asked me to come out and help him when the mother of his my brother's second wife had a nervous breakdown, and my brother called me then, which was years earlier, to come and help him out. And I did that too, and I was taken for granted. I was just used like a nanny and never thanked. So being thanked is a missing piece for me. I was riding in the back seat of the car with this other baby, and Jim was taking his wife to the mental hospital. She was home for a visit, and then he was taking her back, and they started having an argument in the front seat, and the car was going about 50 miles an hour, and the mother opened the door and was going to jump out of the car. And I just was sitting there holding that baby. Oh, God. And this was the man that, as a boy, 9 years old, was damaging for me as a newborn. Wow. Yeah, boy. Woo! Wow.
And you had the right as a newborn to experience your brother as the conscious active presence of love.
Yeah, I did, partially.
That was your right.
Yeah, and I did. But there was also the threat of it killing me. He was choking me. I was choking. And I was really afraid. That was the anchor of the experience of ambivalence in relationship that has been there my whole life, a love-hate experience, because I couldn't help but enjoy aspects of my experience with him, but it was also life-threatening, so it was very profoundly terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, that's some pretty heavy-duty stuff.
Yeah, my brother's in denial about it. He remembered it in a therapy session in New York, and then it went back unconscious again. I tried to talk to him about it 10 years later, and he said, "I never did that. I never said that. I never did that." It was really, it was intense, very intense. Yeah.
Well, I hold the space that everything that's been stirred, and there's been quite a bit stirred today, let loose gently, gracefully, free yourself of that and bring in that presence of active love. You know, you might just imagine your brother being totally and completely tied to an enlightened state of being and bringing to you the purity of that presence of love that you as a young child deserved to have from an older brother, and be simply going through a meditation, imagining that can be a way to fill that nutrient into your physiology and lift you to a new level.
Thank you. Imagine him in a liberated state.
Yes. Yes.
As my brother when I was an infant.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah, thank
precisely.
You.
Go back and go back and redo that whole scenario. You know, the mind can't tell the difference between a real and imagined experience. And so when you go into depth of the imagining of the presence of that, maybe that's one of your spiritual faculties. It's the ability to bring in an energy that, you know, with my earlier thesis that those nutrients were missing, to actually bring that nutrient in and receive it fully in every cell and therefore move to the next level of your process.
Oh, great. Thank you. So that was my personal need of making this phone call today. Thank you very much. Because it certainly had to have been missing for me after what I experienced. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Delighted. delighted to be on the team.
Yeah.
We'll look forward to seeing you in June.
Okie doke.
Okay, blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. So, Michelle, looks like we've got about 4 minutes left. Do we have another hand up, or is that enough time for you to share what you were going to share the other day?
I think I would feel too rushed because, you know, it gives you a notice at 90 seconds, and that's...
Sure.
If that's okay, I would be happy to share. I'm going to be on the show filling in for Jeannie, and so we'll have all next week with some opportunities like that. One thing I will
share
with you...
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it, so it'll be delightful.
Yeah. One thing that I'm noticing, being on the switchboard, I have the privilege of seeing quite a few callers. Like, and it's adorable because there's so many 910 area codes. So that tells me that her law of the living class is going strong.
Rocking.
Mm-hmm. So... just a shout out to her because I'm like 910-909-909. It's like, oh my gosh, her whole class is on the call. So that's nice to see.
That's awesome. And, you know, this is, I just want to acknowledge Susan Darnell for this. She's now doing her 10th Laws of Living class. And I think she's got 9 or 10 people in this class. So it's pretty awesome what she's doing and the way she's impacting that community. And I don't know, maybe if she's out there, she'd put her hand up, and we've only got a couple of minutes, but she could maybe just say hello and share what's happening. Or if someone from the class wanted to. I know I've been processing a lot with Dameron, who was on the show last week, and we talked a little bit about it.
Susan's here to say hi.
Hi, everyone.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a beautiful class last night. It was so lighthearted and fun, and we were laughing and going through the 5th session. So it was pretty awesome. Vitality's rocking. We had a breath session on Sunday evening. So I think everyone had breathed and cleared a lot of what was coming up. And it's just amazing to see this class is just, they're all different, of course, but they want to have a seat at the table with their books. They're the most studious and conscientious, and usually they're chomping at the bit to leave at 9 o'clock, and it's so sweet. This class is like I'm having to tell them at 9:30 or 10 o'clock, okay, I gotta go to bed. It's so it's their enthusiasm is beautiful. It's really nice.
That's awesome. Well, we're certainly holding the space for it and certainly acknowledge you for the work that you've done in Wilmington, the lives that you're touching there and expanding out into larger and larger areas. Has your second support group started yet that you were talking about when we were there?
Actually, I think vacation has kind of taken over on the one in Leland, and I'm waiting to hear from the girl down next to Carolina Beach, the yoga instructor. So she hasn't gotten back with me. She called me. We're playing phone tag. But I want to acknowledge you and Jeannie and Ari and everyone for coming and spending time with us here. I know everyone really enjoys it, you know, and it's amazing support. And this radio show, I'm forever telling people, especially in my laws of living, that we have it from 1 to 2 every day. It's a miracle to have this kind of support. So we are very grateful for everyone who helps this radio show happen, the ones who are listening, Michelle for filling in for Jeannie, and Jeannie for doing what she does, and, of course, Dr. Tim and yourself, Michael. It's phenomenal, the support. And it's beautiful because we are actually moving humanity toward love.
Yay. That's the idea for sure. And I don't know just what, just for information's sake, I don't know what time frame we've got to be able to book a house for next year if we're going to do it. If people want to select a topic and get an intensive setup, get committed to it. If everybody's wanting to move in that direction, make sure to let us know. And we're down to the last few seconds, I just realized. So we'll just say have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Thank you.
I choose to live.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes, and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.